Hallo.
Sådan. Morgen.
Did anybody eat the bowl lid today? Yeah. No. Isn't today like some kind of bowl holiday? It is. Yeah. Yeah. I love Norway. It's like we have a holiday where we eat bowl. My wife used a couple hours last night in making these really nice bolle. Cut them in half, had like this vanilla sauce in the middle. It was really good. Hi, my name is Justin Morehouse. I am not from Norway. I'm almost 38-year-old guy from the U.S. I've been living in Norway for about 8 years now, and yeah, I'm going to be speaking about Daniel today. But first of all, I wanted to ask a question. How many of you work? How many of you have worked before? How many of you are planning on working someday? We all work. Why do we work? You get money. Hmm? Glory. Well, I can stop now. Thank you. Let's pray. Actually, we should pray. Jesus, I thank you for tonight. Thank you that we get to get together like this. I really thank you for the nice weather. I thank you for finally bringing us some snow. And I pray that we would experience you tonight. We would get to know you better. You would help us to get to know ourselves better in our relationship with you. Yeah. Most of all, I pray that you would speak to us today. Amen. Yes. Actually, did we get it to work? No. There was a problem with the headsets for translation. Is it okay if somebody comes and sits next to you if they need it? Yeah. My buddy back here in the back, if you need some help with translating from English to Norwegian, he's more than happy to help. Yeah. So why do we work? We work, as my son said last week, I have a 5-year-old that every morning I go to him and I say, all right, buddy, I got to go to work. I'll see you later on. And he'll say, no, I don't want you to go. Why do you have to go? I'll say, no, I have to go to work to make money so we can eat food. Oh, yeah, okay. So last week I said it to him again. Hey, buddy, I got to go to work. I love you. I'll see you afterwards. Hope you have a good day. I don't want you to go. I have to go, buddy. Oh, yeah, that's right. You have to go so we can make money so that we can buy food so we don't die. I was like, yeah, you got it. But what other reasons are there for us to work besides bringing in a paycheck? Yeah. Can you guys think of any other? You don't, yeah. Yeah, you have a social. You get to know people. You're a part of something. Yeah. For me, that's the second part of why we work. And I'm thinking outside of the right Christian answer of glorifying God. We work to be a part of something, to have a purpose. We get to play a part. We get to be in a circle of people that have a common goal. We're going towards something. And when I talk about work tonight, a lot of it's going to sound like going to work to make a paycheck, but actually work can also be work at home, working for a volunteer type thing, working in the church here. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a paycheck to call it work. Work is a lot of different things. And some of those other types of works that people do that they don't get a paycheck for are sometimes harder. My respect to moms who stay at home. Like my wife does right now, she gets paid because she's on Mama Parm, but man, she works hard. She's got three little boys to look after, and that's a full-time job. So work is, for one thing, if we get paid for it, it's to be able to buy food, to pay for our homes, to have a car, to go on vacation, that kind of stuff. And the other side of it is hopefully to have a purpose, to be a part of something, to find some type of meaning in our everyday life. Working was something, actually, that we were called to do when God created us. If we were to go back, and we're not going to read it now, but if we were to go back into Genesis, when God first created Adam and Eve, he created them and then placed them into a garden and said, okay, I want you to cultivate this and make it into something. And work was actually something that they were given before they fell out of relationship with God. So work isn't a result of not having a relationship with God. He expected us to have something to do. He wanted us to work with our hands, to think with our minds, to be a part of something, that purpose, to socialize, to be with people, to have a goal. So this is something that we were made for, work. But we have to be honest and say sometimes work is not fun, right? How many of you had a job that just was horrible? Yeah, yeah. It was hard to get up in the morning and go to work. Maybe the people that we worked with were a bunch of jerks. And we would much rather have them be doing something else or ourselves doing something else. Work doesn't necessarily spell fun sometimes. Sometimes we're the lucky ones that find a job that 100% of the time it's amazing. But in reality, all of us that work, we're going to find situations that are challenging and sometimes not very enjoyable. But we're called to work. We're created to work. It's a part of our social obligation, a part of our family obligation, and in the Christian faith, it's something that God's given us to do, is to work. I moved to Norway, like I said, about 8 years ago, and my first job that when I came to Norway was to work as a sjuketjenest. And I was really excited about having that job. It was my first job. They were really nice and gave me the job. I couldn't speak Norwegian at the time. I could speak a little bit, you know, just kind of conversationally. But they were really nice, gave me the job. I was excited to get back into the church and work. In the U.S., I worked with Ungdom I Oppdrag, Youth with a Mission, for 6 years, and then worked at my home church for 2 years. I was really involved, had this plan of becoming a pastor, maybe doing some church planting where you start a church in another town. That was my goal until I met this girl from Norway and fell in love. And we all know what happens when you fall in love with Norwegian girls. You move to Norway. I was told in our wedding that there's this old tradition where, you know, the Vikings would go out and bring people home, and it still happens today. They travel out and they bring them back. So that's what happened. So the plan switched upside down. So I was excited. I was like, okay, I get to work in the church again. I was excited to be a part of ministry, to share Jesus with people, to be involved. But then after a little while, I started to realize what kind of position it was. I became very good at lighting candles. The sjuketjenest, if you guys aren't familiar with it, it's or a church dean, if you're an English speaker, is somebody who helps out with all the services in the church. You are the first one there to open up the church, make sure the lights are on, there's enough candles, make sure that if it's a church service that the numbers are up on the wall. We're the ones that put the numbers up on the wall, if you wondered. And not only that, I would help out with all the funerals. We had an elderly home next door, the church, and so by the time I was done after 4 years, I think I'd done over 450 funerals. So I'd be there, help the people bring in the casket, put it there, make sure all the flowers were put in place, light all the candles, go through the service, help them out. Sometimes we would have three. One day we had four funerals in one day. It's not a very enjoyable job. And I actually really started to dislike my job. It was very monotonous. I thought I'd have more time to like share with people, talk with people, but there was really nobody to talk to. It was myself, the priest, the lady that played the organ, and the secretary. And they were all Christians. So I'd hope to have a little bit more contact with people that, than I did. So about 2 years into the job, I got really kind of bored. And it wasn't very fun. And I started to do things like just hang out in my office. If it was a slow day, I'd read the newspaper on the internet. And maybe sometimes I'd start watching YouTube videos. And after a while, I just kind of got lazy. And one of the priests I work with, he was a great guy. He came up to me one day and said, "Hey, I noticed you've been working or like sitting in your office when there's nothing to do. But there's this other stuff you could be doing. If you can help us out with this and this." And I was like, "Well, that's not a part of my job. I'm not going to do that." And after that conversation, I went home and I started thinking, man, I'm lazy. I have a horrible work ethic right now. Work ethic, or Arbeitsmoral, the way you guys talk about is the way that you are effective in your job, how you approach your job, the energy that you have in your job. And I started to realize, man, I've really started to get lazy, and my work ethic is horrible right now. And when I was a kid, I used to go help my grandpa on the farm. And people that work on farms, they have work ethic. They are hard workers, and I learned to work hard. Get up at 5:30 in the morning, go out and start helping with the horses, and I mean, you worked until the end of the day. So I started to look at myself and thinking, wow, you are lazy. You are not a good employee right now. And God started to speak to me about somebody in the Bible named Daniel that had a work situation that didn't even compare to my situation, and he had the best work ethic ever. And so that's what we're going to look at tonight, is Daniel. Why he had a really good work ethic. So my plan is to go and look at who Daniel was, and then we're going to look at a somewhat familiar story that everybody probably heard in Sunday school if you were there, with him in a hole full of lions. So we're going to start in, I'll just start giving, we'll do the first verse. I'm going to read in English, but the Norwegian is back here for you to read. So in Daniel 1, chapter 1, in the third year of the reign of King Joachim of Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord let King Joachim of Judah fall into his power, as well as some of the vessels of the house of God. These he brought to the land of Shinar and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded his palace master, Ashvez, to bring some of the Israelites of the royal family and of the nobility, young men without physical defect and handsome, versed in every branch of wisdom, endowed with knowledge and insight, and competent to serve in the king's palace. They were to be taught the literature and language of the Chaldeans. Yeah, I'll just stop there. Daniel was one of these guys that was taken. So the story goes about 600 years before Jesus was born. This Nebuchadnezzar guy went and besieged Jerusalem and ended up taking it over. And instead of destroying the whole place, he left some people there, and he took some of the best with him back home. And some of these boys that were taken, they were probably anywhere between, I'm guessing from things that I've read, anywhere between 8 years old and 14 years old, roughly there. These were kids that already knew how to read and write. They were in the noble family. And Daniel was one of these kids that was taken. He was probably a noble kid, young, very smart, had was literate. And so he was chosen to be taken back to Babylon and serve in the king's court. And what happened there was these kids were taken and they were indoctrinated into the way of the Babylonians. And the idea behind it was Nebuchadnezzar was kind of an interesting guy. He was very taken with other cultures, other literature, and he wanted to learn wisdom from other people so that he could be a better ruler. And so he would take these kids back home, he would indoctrinate them, and sometimes he would actually send them back to where they were from to rule the country for him because they were so indoctrinated. Another thing that's interesting to note here is can you put the verses back up from the first one? Oh, yeah. Sorry. I apologize. There's this guy that's mentioned, the master of his palace, the palace master. Other translations call him a eunuch. A eunuch is somebody who's castrated. And I hope this isn't true for Daniel's sake. But a lot of the practice of these kings back in the day is if they took prisoners like this or slaves, they would castrate them if they were to serve in their house so that they wouldn't be able to produce families or produce kids. So here's Daniel, young boy, taken from his home to live in the house of a king that had just taken over his land and most likely was castrated. So he had a really bad day, to say it lightly. So Daniel, this is around, 600 years before, so 606 years before Christ came. He over the years, we're not going to go into it, but over the years he became very affluent in the household of the king. He became very helpful, was a really good employee, to say it in the way of we would say it. He showed himself to be really faithful, very helpful. And so now we're going to fast forward around 40 to 50 years to the story that everybody's probably read in Sunday school, the time when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den. We'll take up the first chapter 6. So I'm going to read through a bit. I'm going to skip some stuff because there's a lot of text, but we'll get to some of the main points. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 123 workers stationed throughout the whole kingdom. And over these three presidents, including Daniel, to these the satraps gave account so that the king might suffer no loss. Soon Daniel distinguished himself above all the other presidents and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to appoint him over the whole kingdom. So the presidents and the satraps tried to find ground to complain against Daniel in connection with the kingdom, but they could find no grounds for complaint or any corruption because he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption could be found in him. Then the men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." So this Darius guy that is mentioned, he ruled about 40 or 50 years after Nebuchadnezzar. So at this point, Daniel's probably around anywhere from 50 to 60 years old. And we see that he's found himself in a very high position in the kingdom. Now remember, he was taken as a boy, maybe castrated, put into the household of the king that took over his land, that killed a bunch of his family. He's pretty much a slave in this house, but he's been working very hard. And he's presented himself in such a way that he's found this high position. I find this crazy. I think if I was put in that position and somebody came to my house in Hamad and took me away and Maybe it was Sweden they took me to. I would be really mad. I would find ways of rebelling. I would wonder, what can I do to make the person that captured me suffer? But here we see Daniel in a position 50 years later, serving faithfully his captors. He isn't backing down from the job that he's been given. And he also finds himself in a position where he's almost going to lead the whole country. How does somebody get to that place? Especially because of the background that he has. So the story goes, these guys want to find a way to get him out of that position. So they come up with this idea of talking the king into a law where he can't, or where he passes a law where people can't praise or worship anybody, any other god than the king himself. So they kind of get sneaky and go around his back and use something of his faith against him in order to get him caught. So the king makes this law, and amazingly enough, Daniel reacts in this way. We're going to go to verse 10 on the screen. Although David knew that the documents had been signed, he continued to go to his house, which had windows in its upper room open towards Jerusalem, and to get down on his knees 3 times a day to pray to his God and praise him, just as he had previously done. The conspirators came and found Daniel praying and seeking mercy before his God. So what happens here is these guys go to the king and say, found Daniel doing this. Daniel's response to this was, okay, I'm going to be faithful to God. I'm going to go and do what I've done every day of my life. I'm going to get down and pray and seek God. I'm going to make him a part of my everyday life just as I always have. So Daniel shows that his true faith and his true source of work ethic started with this practice of every day going and seeking God above and beyond the position that he was given. So the guys decide that they're going to go tell the king. The king finds out. The king doesn't like it. Here is the guy that he's about to set as the president over his whole country has to be taken under this law. So the king decides that, okay, he has to die. So the king takes him, he puts him into a lion's den and puts a rock over it and goes home and waits for the next day. And the next day, in verse 19, it says, then at the break of day, the king got up and hurried to the den of lions. When he came near the den where Daniel was, he cried out anxiously to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you faithfully serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? Daniel then said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they could not hurt me, because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king, I have done no wrong. So incredibly enough, this king knew Daniel enough to know that he was a servant of God. And Daniel was saved by God because he was found blameless. But also, Daniel makes the point of saying, but I was also faithful to you. Which is interesting because he actually went against a law that the king made. But he was able to say with a clean conscience, I haven't done something towards the king that was malicious or wrong. So he was found both faithful and committed to God and his employer. and remember, his employer is a non-Jew slave owner who is ruling over his homeland and not a very nice guy. But Daniel still sees the value in saying, but I served you faithfully. And here's how the king responds in 25. Then King Darius wrote to all the people and nations of every language throughout the whole world, may you have abundant prosperity. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people should tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion has no end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, for he has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. Now here's his employer, his owner, all of a sudden saying these things about the God that he's serving, the God that Darius himself does not serve, because previously he set himself up as God for people to worship. Through Daniel's faithfulness, through his desire to work as an employee, to work faithfully with God and through to his employer. I call him his employer. He's not really his employer. He's a slave owner. But you understand what I'm trying to say. He was faithful to both. And because of that, Darius realized who God was. So, for me, this was really encouraging when I was in this situation as a Sheikh Ketianet, hating my job, because all of a sudden I realized, man, I don't have it half as bad, not even a tenth as bad as Daniel did. But man, he was really faithful. He had a work ethic. He exceeded at his job, even though his situation really allowed for him on a human level to be very bitter, rebellious, and try to find ways of destroying the kingdom that was actually ruling over his own homeland. And at the end of the day, the king himself declared to the whole kingdom who God was. So at that time, I started thinking about, okay, what were the things that Daniel focused on in order to have this type of work ethic? The first one was he involved God in his everyday life. He focused on God in his everyday life. He got down 3 times a day and prayed and worshiped God. So it's having a living relationship with God. The second was that he wanted to help people have an experience of the living God through his life. Daniel put himself in positions to where God would be shown for who he really is. Daniel lived his life in a way where people knew which God he served. And he also lived an excellent life. They couldn't find any, like it said, they couldn't find any grounds to make him go away. So they actually had to use his own faith that he had been expressing against him. So these are the two things that I focused on during that time was how, and I started to realize that because I was getting lazy, bored, not enjoying life, I wasn't really focusing that much on God and my relationship with God. And then the second was I really stopped caring if people had an experience with God through my life. I got there in the morning, I would open the doors, I'd light some candles, I'd go back to my office, put my suit on, because I had to wear a suit every day. I am not a suit guy. 4 years of a suit. And that was my day. Blow out the candles, turn off the lights, go home. But I started to realize that, okay, to have my purpose for going to work, making money so we can buy food. My other purpose that I want is in order to be a part of something. My hope was to be a part of something that was bigger than me. Work in the church, meet people where they were. But I all of a sudden became just satisfied with taking home money instead of being a part of something bigger. And as a Christian, being a part of something that's even bigger, and that's representing God to the people around me in everyday life. Daniel, his work ethic included these two things: focusing on God, being involved with God in everyday life on a personal level. And on the second, it was honoring God, representing God, presenting God to the people around him in everyday life. That was the power behind the reason why he worked. So how's that going for you? Why do you work? There's nothing wrong with working to make money. We need it, or we'll die, like my son says. A lot of us in the room, we work now. Some of us are studying to get ready to work. We also do other types of work around the house. We do yard work, meet the neighbors, stuff like that. Why do we work? Why do we do the things that we do? Paul puts it another way. This will be my challenge for you tonight. 1 Corinthians 10, 31 to 33. So whether you eat or drink, or whether you do, or whatever you do, do everything for the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews, or to Greeks, or to the church of God. Just as I try to please everyone in everything I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, so that they might be saved. As Christians, we are called to make disciples. We are called to present the gospel of Christ to the people around us. That might have not been something you were told when you first became a Christian, or it wasn't in the job description. But in reality, that's who we are. As Christians, we are representing a living God to the community around us, to the workplace that we're in, to our families, to our neighbors. And having a work ethic, having a desire to work, a way that we work, not necessarily being the best. Work ethic, I think you don't say, I become the best in my office at doing this. I'm the smartest. It's the way that we do things. It's the way that we work, the faithfulness behind what we do, being encouraging to the people around us, showing love, concern, being on time to work. Because the thing is, when people that we're around find out that we're Christians, we start to represent Jesus to them. And so my challenge to you tonight is, why do you work? How do you work? What is the energy? What is the power behind your everyday life when you're at work? 1st of all, I would encourage you to focus on your own personal relationship with God. It doesn't have to look like Daniel's. I don't have time during the day to sit down on my knees and pray 3 times a day. I'm lucky if I get 5 minutes. But have it be a focus. Let him be involved in everyday life. And the second is realize that in some situations, you're going to be the only representative of Jesus that somebody's going to meet during the day. So how is their interaction with you going to affect their understanding of who Jesus is? Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you that you want to be in relationship with us. You want to be involved in our everyday lives. You desire to be with us when we're at work, when we're with our family, with our neighbors. You want to be involved. Jesus, I pray that you would help us to understand how in our everyday lives to get you more involved, and also how we can represent you and honor you with the rest of our days. I pray that we would be representatives that meet people that don't know you, that we can speak about who you are and show who you are through our actions. I pray that you would show us how to love. Amen.